Alma Alexio. Benvenuti ad Alma Alexio, il podcast dell'Università di Bologna dedicato alle Lectio Magistralis, tenute da scienziati, intellettuali e personaggi illustri che nel corso degli anni sono stati invitati dall'Università di Bologna a condividere il loro sapere e contribuire alla divulgazione della conoscenza. In questa quarta puntata ascoltiamo Martin Scorsese, regista e sceneggiatore italo-americano. La sua visione del cinema come costante processo di apprendimento e la valorizzazione del patrimonio cinematografico sono i temi della Lectio Magistralis tenuta il 26 novembre 2005 in occasione della sua laurea ad honorem. Buon ascolto!
Grazie, grazie mille. But please forgive me, I must speak in English. I want to thank, for this great honor, I wish to thank the president of the university, Dr. Piero Ugo Calzolari, the head of the department, Dr. Giuseppe Sassatelli, as well as Professor Franco Lapola, and the entire faculty. When I was young, I guess when you're young, you imagine that a time would come when you've learned enough. I mean, we all feel that when we're growing up, the world of adults is a mystery to us. And it seems as though there must be some limit to the knowledge that you might acquire in order to enter the world of the adults. Of course, learning never ends. I'm a filmmaker. I made about 20 feature films and a number of short films, documentaries, and I'm in the process now of making my 21st film, and I guess they say I'm a busy man. But learning is part of what that busyness is. Or should I say, I mean, learning is my business. I'm always studying films. Even when I'm making them, I'm continually amazed at how much there is for me to learn yet. Even in the least likely places, new films, old films, classics, forgotten pictures, I always find something unexpected, something revealing, something exciting. And this process, the actual process of filmmaking, making movies, is a learning process. It's a re-education. Every problem to be solved, every choice to be made, on that day, under the pressure, is like a final exam. And believe me, there are many, many trick questions. And when the picture's finished, you know, and you're ready to show it to people, that too is a learning process. I mean, like any filmmaker, I hope that people will see what I'm trying to do. And of course, that's not always the case. And so I learned something new again about my own work in the process. Once again, it's a re-education and a relearning occurs. I guess I started the learning process with just being curious, and that led to being absorbed of the world around me, of my family, and then of movies that I saw. And I must tell you, one of the most informative experiences I had in my life was sitting with my family at the age of 5 years old, my parents and my grandparents who came from Sicily, watching Rossellini's Paisa on television in New York City in 1948. And then seeing my grandparents' reactions to what they were seeing. They were catching a first glimpse of that country they had left in 1900 and had left behind, as well as the impact of the war on the people and the land. And I was learning about my family. I was learning about who I was and where I came from. I was learning that there were different kinds of movies, too, by seeing this film. Different kinds. It didn't all have to look and feel like Hollywood films, which are very beautiful, but they weren't all the same. And I was learning about the effect that movies can have, the emotions that stories told with images and sound could inspire. The process of making movies, I mean, to actually make a movie, to think at the age of 5 or 6 to make a film, it's unthinkable. There was no way from where I came from that you could actually go into the production of film in New York City in 1950s. That all changed when I entered New York University in 1960. At that time, I had the idea that I would eventually go back into a seminary and try to become a priest. But the moment I walked into Professor Haig Manoogian's class, I knew there was no turning back. Haig Manoogian's family came from Armenia. And when he began teaching film at New York University in 1948, the School of the Arts, the way it is now in New York, did not exist. Now it enrolls 3,700 students in 14 programs in different departments But at the time I was there, the film department senior class was one class that had 32 students. And that was just an outgrowth of the radio department. And before anything else, Haig Manoogian taught his students how to believe in themselves. He gave us confidence. He gave us something much more precious than mere technical knowledge. He set fire to our hearts. He pushed us and cajoled us and complained and beat us down and built us back up again. Like all great teachers, he gave us and infused us with power. I believed in cinema, I really did, but Haig Manoogian got me to believe in myself, and he believed in me. When it came time for the script that I eventually called Mean Streets that I told him I wanted to make, he looked at me and says, "Who cares about these people that you're making this film about?" And I said, "Well, I care." He made you say to yourself, "I care. I want to make it because I'm dying to make it, because I have something to say that no one else can say, and because I see it the way no one else could ever see it." That's what he gave me, by constantly questioning and pushing to believe in yourself. That's what a great educator does. They share their own knowledge, but more importantly, they inspire. They inspire you to acquire your own knowledge. Haig Manoogian died in New York May 26, 1980. And at the end of Raging Bull, which I thought at that point would be the last film I would make, I dedicated the film to him. Haig also, he sort of paved the way for other great teachers in my life. Some, of course, I never will have met. D.W. Griffith, Orson Welles, John Ford. John Cassavetes I did meet. He was somebody I did meet. And he was not only another great teacher, but he became a friend, a real friend, and spent and gave of his time and talent and genius to me and other younger filmmakers. He became a great mentor. He extended the lesson that Haig taught. He told me, believe in yourself. He said, "Hey man, you know, to make a film, you can't be afraid of anybody or anything. Even if you are, you can't show it." Later, there was another mentor, my old friend Michael Powell, who believed passionately and completely in the power of art, and of course in himself as an artist. The pictures he made with Emrich Pressburger, they'll always be with me like friends on a very, very long adventure. But when it came to Italian films, I always find myself reverting back to that time being with my family, seeing these films on television and in theater. And what I learned from them and living with my family, my parents were working class people. There were no books in my house. They didn't read. Yet they were the initial inspirational experience for me and remain so until now. I guess because of my background, I mean, they were not illiterate, they could read, but there were no books in the house. There was no habit of reading. Perhaps thanks to that, my response and I guess my approach to movies has been emotional rather than intellectual. And later in life, of course, I began to realize that so much of a literary background is important. So many great new wave directors had that. But that wasn't my case. That wasn't the world at the beginning for me. It wasn't my world at the beginning. Being very sickly with asthma at the age of 3, I was sort of kept in refuges. They would put me, the only place where I could be was two places, either the church or in a movie theater. And so in the documentary I made a few years ago, Il mio viaggio in Italia, I talked about those formative years and the impact the Italian films of neorealism had on me watching them with my family. By the time I reached film school, I think I subconsciously transferred the commitment I had and the fervor that I had that I thought I had had in religious vocation to filmmaking. And the more I found out about Italian cinema and Italian culture, the more I responded to its relationship to religion. And this link between religion and cinema in Italy was real, deep, and often very controversial in Italian film. I first learned this from Rossellini films, but later it was really Pier Paolo Pasolini who took the profound compassion of those films, their spirituality, to a new level. And together with filmmakers like Ermanno Olmi and Francesco Rossi, Pasolini taught me cinema, taught me more about Italy, but ultimately taught me about life. The first part of the documentary, Il mio viaggio in Italia, was mostly about discovering my family roots through neorealist films. The second part, which I hope to do soon, will be about the discovery of Italian culture through the cinema of the 60s and early 70s, up to the point where I began to make films myself, because then I think my perspective would change. Neorealism seemed to be a tree which had many branches, right? But to me, some of these directors seemed to become or blossom on their own. They represented a new generation with entirely new concerns after the original films of neorealism. And what I'd like to do is, just, if you bear with me, just give you a little preview of what I'd like to cover in that second documentary. When I saw Acatone, Pasolini's first film, in 1962 in New York, I had no idea really that he was a writer, and the role, of course, that he was to play later in 20th century Italian cultural life. I didn't even know he'd come to cinema from literature, so I had no preconceived notion. I just walked in and saw this movie, and I found out everything afterwards about him, as I did with Olmi and with Rossi. But for me, the revelation of Acatone was a spiritual one. It was aesthetic and personal. Aesthetic, spiritual, and personal, all at the same time. And it felt so close to my own experience and where I came from that it helped guide me through the making of Mean Streets a few years later. It seemed, just from seeing the film, Acatone, it seemed to me that he was trying to simplify, to capture life in its rawest state and put it right up there on the screen. And in so doing, Pasolini took cinema to a new level. He took it to the sacred, I think. It was right there. It was right there, the sacred and the profane together. Christ represented by the pimp, the lowlife, the Acatone. Yet in the pimp's suffering, he gets closest to the sacred. Then there was the beauty and the power and the joy of Evangelos Secondo Matteo. I saw that at the Bleecker Street Cinema in the early 60s, but what a mixture of emotions I had, because in my mind, this is even before I made my very first film, I had always wanted to make a film on Christ, but set in the Lower East Side of New York, present day, in my neighborhood, people dressed as they were at the time, black suits, etc., Jesus maybe being crucified somewhere on the New York docks. It's shot in cinema verite style, but there it was. I looked at the Pasolini's beautiful film, and he had done it. He made Christ both intimate and joyous and alive for today, but I never gave up on that, and I think a lot of that found its way into The Last Temptation of Christ that I finally made in 1988. And now just a few words about Olmi and Rossi before summing up. At the same time, it was a remarkable time to see films. At the same time, another voice was there, another revelation, Ermanno Olmi, a very special figure. On the surface, his movies seemed to me like, at first, like neorealism in a traditional sense, but only 20 years later, there was a difference, because this was the 1960s, and yet somehow, the recent past of Italy, depicted in his films, thank you, seemed like a distant memory, very, very far in the distance. And this memory, I think, is what's behind the poetry of Olmi's work. Even until today, you could see it in his latest film, a short film that he made in a compilation film called Tickets. These feelings of melancholy, his rare sweetness, and above all, his gentle and respectful eye are all there in his work, a work which was as great an influence then as well as now for filmmakers as varied as myself, all the way to China, seeing Zhuang Zhuang, the director of The Blue Kite and The Horse Thief, who counts Mr. Olmi as one of his greatest influences, to Abbas Kiarostami in Iran today. And Mr. Olmi's film Il Posto influenced me. Even parts of it show up in Raging Bull somehow. But I Fidanzati cast a spell on me. It still does to this day. The Southerners gone to the North, and the editing of time and space. At first, it didn't seem connected, but ultimately I began to realize the language was the language of a poem. And I never tire of experiencing this film, and people never tire of talking about it in America to those who know the picture. A few words about Rossi, Francesco Rossi. Another unique vision, political and lyrical at the same time. His films are not melodramas, but they're not gangster films. But again, you see his roots in neorealism, but he's very tricky. First, he gets you involved emotionally. Then, he pushes you back to be objective. And he provokes you. He provokes you asking you, what is a fact? What is a fact? And for Rossi, a landscape is very precious. It's made up of flesh and blood. But In his pictures, the landscape is nothing until it's filled with real people and real places. And in many of his films, landscape has been the south of Italy. But in these films of Rossi, the south bleeds. And so we have a film like Salvatore Giuliano. And so Salvatore Giuliano, with moments like the journalist bursting into poetry, exhorting Sicily to awaken. Moments like the keening and the mourning of the women and the mother over her son's dead body, who was supposed to be Giuliano's body. The betrayals and more betrayals and even more betrayals. And even more epiphanies continue to weave throughout this work, all his work, like music. Yet, with these pictures like Giuliano and Le Mani sulle Città and the Mattai Affair, he doesn't seem to reach a resolution of truth. It's the search for the facts that seems to matter. He puts it on us, on the viewers, to think and to understand that knowledge ultimately is freedom. And as tough as he is, he's just as lyrical, just as lyrical. Rossi's Southern Italy, including Sicily, it's just not simply something for a social study. He knows tradition has great value, but it can also be a great ball and chain. It could be a deadly weight. Yet, in Rossi's movies, the South is still a magical world, a primitive, magical world of kind of primitive ritual, where history becomes myth, and myth becomes history. Rossi's movies, opened my eyes to my origins like a slap in the face. And it's funny because when I think about it, when I first saw Salvatore Giuliano, I was younger, 40 years ago, on its first release, and I actually quite lost some of it. I was complicated for me to follow, but my father, when he saw it, understood it intuitively, and it became one of his favorite films. And I realized over the years that although my father was first-generation Sicilian-American, born in New York City in 1913, his roots remained deep, very deep to the world, the culture, the thinking, oppression, which Rossi was depicting in his films. Last section, I promise. In my documentary, Il mio viaggio in Italia, I mentioned earlier we had started with Rossellini's work, and finally, for the ending, I think we have to end up with Rossellini. His work on television, for me, was important in the 60s and 70s. It was important because it seemed he really had a vocation for teaching, and I'm attracted to that. I mean, of course, if he had made only one film, Open City or Paisa, he'd be remembered for revolutionizing the history of cinema. If he made only two films, Open City, Viaggio in Italia, he would also be remembered for helping create what we call the modern cinema. He made over about 60 films, I guess, yet he's kind of elusive because I think he's talked about more than there are people who have seen his films, or have seen most of them anyway. But what fascinates and inspires me about Rossellini to this day is that he spent the last 15 years of his life experimenting in the use of images to create an education that combined all forms of knowledge which human beings are capable of. And he dealt with this through the making of films on historical subjects. Can you do that part? Great. I guess these are called his didactic films, mostly made for TV in the 60s and 70s. He visualized this great project, a big project, to recreate the most important moments of change in Western civilization through the lives of what he thought were the key historical figures: Socrates, Christ, the apostles, Augustine of Hippo, the Medici, Louis XIV, Descartes, Pascal. And before he died, I think he was planning a film on Karl Marx and Caligula and Marco Polo and Diderot and the American Revolution. If Open City deals with contemporary history at the time through the lives of everyday people, then the historical films he made treat great historical figures as ordinary people. And then suddenly, history becomes immediate and accessible. And he made this very exciting. He began to understand what happened. He felt that the moving image itself, motion pictures and television, had the potential to be the great technological advance for teaching and learning. And at best, Rossellini seemed to want to teach all things to all people from all points of view. And it's been called integral education. I believe this was the way, too. After making Raging Bull, when I thought I wasn't going to make any more films, feature films, I was planning to come here to work with Rye Television to do a series of documentaries on the changing of the ancient world into the Christianity, the ancient religions, all this sort of thing. And it was a series that started, but then that became a different subject. To him, to Rossellini, he felt knowledge was more important than art. Put quotes around the word art, but he couldn't escape art. There was no way he could escape it. Because for me, you could see the film La Prise du Pouvoir par Louis XIV, the rise of Louis XIV. I think that is evidence that besides knowledge, the film is a great work of art. I only met him once, actually, in a traffic jam in Rome in 1970. I was walking with a gentleman named Ettore Mattia, a journalist, and he was a friend of Rossellini's. He saw me, he said, "Oh, Roberto, this is a young filmmaker from America, he likes your films, say hello to him." So the cars, nothing could move, so they were walking. We walked from one block, and I told him about Louis XIV in New York, how much people were waiting online to see the picture at that time that actually happened, for them to see a film of that kind. And it was a great success. But he rejected it. He says, "Oh, I reject that film. It's too artistic." And I'm on my way to Houston, Texas, to study, to see the latest developments in science, and to make films about scientific discoveries. And he said goodbye and walked away. Nevertheless, Louis XIV, is a film that inspired me from Goodfellas to Age of Innocence to Kundun and on and on. And what mattered for him, though, what I learned by watching these films, was the inquiry for the truth rather than the arrival at the truth. Ultimately, though, for me, the spiritual warmth that has always infused his films showed what was his greatest strength, I think. His greatest strength was his faith in humanity. Today, I realize that film and all its new permutations, you know, video, laser, DVD, high definition, cable, these are tools now that we have, and a responsibility we have to forge them into weapons of our spirit. They have to work for us and not us for them. And I think that really is Rossellini's lesson. And so finally, it's impossible for me to express to you how much I think I've learned or been inspired from Italian cinema and Italian culture, like Visconti, Fellini, Rossellini, De Sica, Rossi, Antonioni, Pasolini, the precious Bertolucci, so many others. Even Vittorio Di Seta, with one film, made such an impact on the history of Italian cinema. As I said, that moment when I saw my grandparents reacting to Paisa, that was the formative moment for me. It was a revelation that continues to unfold. Post-war Italian cinema has been at the core of my learning, and it's a shining moment in the history of cinema, an inspiration for filmmakers from all over the world. These films taken all together, the Italian films taken all together, offer the greatest collective expression of spiritual resurgence that I know of. All these films, Visconti, like with his extraordinary historical and operatic sweep, and Rossellini with his radical simplicity, Fellini with a kind of almost supernatural grace, De Sica with a remarkable empathy and depth of perception, and Rossi with his passion for justice and lyrical power, Lantagnoni with a sense of daring, innovation, astounding depth and power of his insights and images, Pasolini with his utterly individual visual grammar and his surging intellect. All these voices in chorus lifted us up, all of us. Speaking for myself as a Sicilian American, as a filmmaker, I was always in search of revelation, of new ways of seeing and understanding. I don't know where I'd be without these films. What I've learned from them and what I could still have to learn from them is incalculable. Very often I'm asked or expected to give some form of advice for younger students. And I always find that the advice is this: you have to find the courage to deal with the truth that matters to you and you alone, the truth that only you know. As for, you know, being recognized and awards, it's very nice, but it tends to be misleading. It's really about the process. It's always the process that matters. And the ultimate aim for all of us, no matter what we do, I feel, is to become better, more compassionate human beings. It sounds simple, and I suppose it is, but the road to simplicity is a very long, difficult, sometimes dangerous, and often very tricky. And at the age of 63, I feel that I'm just beginning on that.
mi chiedono spesso di dare dei consigli agli studenti. Allora il mio consiglio è il seguente: cercate di trovare il coraggio per esprimere la realtà che vi appartiene, una realtà che solo voi conoscete. I premi e i riconoscimenti ufficiali sono senz'altro gratificanti, ma a volte possono quasi essere fuorvianti. L'importanza sta proprio nel processo, solo in quello. Lo scopo ultimo di tutti noi, a prescindere da tutto, è credo quello di migliorare, di diventare degli esseri umani in grado di provare compassione. Può sembrare un'impresa facile, e forse lo è, ma la strada verso la semplicità a volte è lunga, difficile, rischiosa e spesso ingannevole, e io a 63 anni sento di averla appena cominciata.
So I thank you for your patience, and I also thank you for this extraordinary honor. Thank you.
Avete ascoltato la Lectio Magistralis sul cinema, tenuta dal regista Martin Scorsese il 26 novembre 2005 presso l'Aula Magna di Santa Lucia dell'Alma Mater Studiorum, Università di Bologna. Vi aspettiamo alla prossima Alma Lectio.